We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. And my co-host, as always on the podcast, is Sean Siegel. Sean, we had our show on Tuesday. We said that we hit episode 400 of the RotoViz Overtime podcast. So that one is in the books, but we're straight on to the next 100 or the next 400 or whatever we want to call it. And this is episode 401, but we're delighted have a very special guest on today's show. It is Scott Barrett. We've had him on in the past. There's a few guys now, Scott, have got on to their second appearance. We didn't used to have many guests here on the podcast, so welcome back for, I believe it is, the second time. You can find all of Scott's work over at Fantasy Points, and you can check him out on Twitter as well at Scott Barrett DFB. But Scott, welcome back to the RotoViz Overtime podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really excited to be here. I told you guys I wasn't joking. I've been looking forward to this all week. I kind of just like settle down in my bunker and I try and tune out the noise. But I always really look forward to reading everything Sean has to say. So I'm going to do that over the next week or so, and I'll get the spoilers at least on this podcast.
Well, Scott, it's awesome to have you on. You're one of our favorite guests, and you and I are currently kind of at the tail end of one of these rookie drafts where you've set up the league as an animal shelter league. It's a really cool league that you put together with a lot of your readers. And I was lucky enough to also be invited to that last year, co-managing the team with Sam Wallace. We'll talk a little bit more about that one in the second show, but it is cool, I think, that as we head up to the reality draft here, that you and I are already drafting against some of these folks, and we've got a rookie draft going. These early rookie drafts, you've definitely got to be on your toes because you don't know the draft slots yet for these players. So we're going to find out today, though, from you, what the draft slots are going to be for all these guys. So we'll be all set. I needed to do this before we did our draft, although you guys had a lot of picks, and Sam and I were more down in rounds 2, 3, and 4. And at that point, you can just have some fun. But this should be great, and we're going to start off here in the first show with some running backs.
Yeah, we're going to dive in. We're going to look at Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker. Obviously, those are the two names that are being talked about at the top end of this draft class. Do you think that there, you know, should be a gap? Is it a big gap? Is it a small gap between Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker? And then I know this was part that you were excited to talk about. Is there a scenario, at least temporarily, that we would see them flip in terms of what we've seen previously with Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire a couple of years ago? And for the people who don't know, obviously the Chiefs did draft CEH over Jonathan Taylor, which was an all-time bad decision.
Yeah. So you sent me this in the show notes, and I replied back, I feel seen. I feel so seen. I think Sean and I were two people who were pounding the table for Jonathan Taylor before the combine as a generational prospect. And then I think Sean, if I remember correctly, stuck to his guns and said, this is the RB1, even after the Chiefs took CH. I totally flip-flopped. I'm like, oh my God, he's with Mahomes. They're going to score 80 touchdowns. Like, he's the RB1. And that did not work out well. And sometimes that's what happens, you know, when you take a running back who might be a day three caliber prospect in reality, and you try and fit him in. Andy Reid was like, this guy is better than Brian Westbrook. And yeah, I mean, clearly not. I got sort of carried away in the hype. I'm like, you know, my model says he's, I don't know, RB5 in the class, RB6, but you know, Andy Reid says that. Like, I mean, who am I to disagree with Andy Reid? So I've kind of treated things differently this year. I've really just, you know, stuck to my guns and stuck to the model. So the question was about Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker. And I think right now specifically it is, I don't know if there's a big tier between them, but I do think Breece Hall is the easy RB1 ahead of him, just because, you know, this is what like JJ Zacharyson's, you know, pounding the table for all offseason is, well, Kenneth Walker didn't catch passes and Breece Hall did. And yeah, that, you know, my model said Breece Hall's the better prospect by production efficiency, better prospect by athleticism. And a lot of that came down to, hey, this guy projects to be a true bell cow at the next level. I'm optimistic on Kenneth Walker. I think he can catch passes. I think he will catch passes, actually. It's just a way more of a question with him. So he's just the clear RB2. But, you know, in that draft Sean was talking about, we took him 103. I'm pretty high on him. Are there scenarios where I could flip it? I don't know. I don't think so. I will watch the post-draft presser and hope to hear the GM or coach say, oh no, this guy can catch passes. We're going to turn him into a bell cow. That would be big. But like, that's a good question to turn back to you guys. It's like, what are the most likely landing spots, and how many of those landing spots are gold mines versus landmines? Everyone says Buffalo. I can't tell whether or not that's a gold mine or a landmine. Like, Devin Singletary absolutely smashed at the tail end of last season, but prior to that, it was just Josh Allen never targeting running backs and hogging all the rushing touchdowns to himself. So I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts.
Well, Scott, how important would you say the receiving element is? We've talked about guys who look like Kenneth Walker. They're the most likely to add receptions. And so I would completely agree with what you're talking about there. I think there's a chance that someone like a Breece Hall maybe is the most likely to not actually be a huge receiving back in the NFL. Now, there's a difference between, say, 3 expected points per game as a receiver and, you know, 6. Anything like that's going to change kind of what you're looking at, both as a baseline and then as, you know, how does the person look when they outperform? You know, can they get to where they're averaging 18, 19, 20 expected points a game and then have a season where they go 3 or 4 over, and then suddenly you've got a league winner? How does that portion of it play out to you? Now, obviously we know that we get overly confident in how accurate you're going to be in terms of saying what the workload is for these players. But when you're looking at it, is it necessary to get those receptions to really still have the guy on your board? And we've got some guys like a Derrick Henry, who obviously has done really well. Now, that's something where you've got to be like best of the best, and most of the guys coming in aren't going to do that. But you also have someone like a J.K. Dobbins, who, if he's healthy and if they don't add some like Melvin Gordon, could perhaps also do some things without the receiving. But kind of when we were looking at it several years ago, you have DeAndre Swift versus J.K. Dobbins, and obviously the receiving element post-draft especially becomes something that people are looking at. Is that the number one thing that we should look at? And just to kind of look at Buffalo, I mean, I don't think that would be great, because Devin Singletary is actually pretty good. And so suddenly you're then in a situation where I don't think that you're going to immediately put Devin Singletary to where he's getting, you know, 15% of the snaps.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Although Singletary, they kind of like waffled on him. You know, there were parts of the year last year, the year before, where he kind of like faded away, and then he came back super strong and was a bell cow. But yeah, I'm kind of with you on that point. So my draft strategy with the running back position specifically is that, with very rare exceptions, e.g. Derrick Henry, I am bell cow or bust. I want bell cow running backs. And I define that arbitrarily as a running back who, you know, dominates by snaps, carries, target, snap share, carry share, target share, and, you know, wins in all of those areas and gets, all of the goal line opportunities. He doesn't cede that to another running back. And I don't want just workhorse early down plotters who don't catch targets. I don't want scat packs who only catch targets. I don't want handcuffs. I just all in on bell cows. And if you're not a bell cow, I don't want you. In a PPR league, a target is worth 2.64 times as much as a carry. Outside of the red zone, it's worth 3.13 times as much. And so it was really interesting when I ran through my model. Is like my model is kind of like just mirrors my methodology. That wasn't at all intentional. It's just sort of how it came out, where it's basically ranking these guys like by their bell cow potential, which is exactly what I would have done anyway without my model. And so like the main separator between Hall and Walker is it's a known fact, I think, my model thinks, that Hall will be a bell cow in the running back and a very high level prospect. With Walker, it's just a question. But again, I'm optimistic. And I look at all the things that are most predictive for future fantasy production in the NFL and future receptions. And so I don't look at a lot of the things other people look at, like reception share. I don't think that's too predictive. Missed tackles forced per reception is a good one. But you know what's predictive? Being an elite runner, because at least that we know gets you on the field. And Kenneth Walker, by my data, is an elite runner, like really obscene metrics. And we've seen over the years so many running backs who did not catch passes in college, who became ultra-productive pass catchers. Darren Sproles, Le'Veon Bell, Ray Rice, LaDainian Tomlinson, more recently, Jonathan Taylor, A.J. Dillon, Melvin Gordon. And those last three specifically, that was due to what I believe to be coaching scheme stubbornness. You look at all the running backs that come out of those schools, and they just never caught passes. And I think that was the same exact thing with Kenneth Walker, because remember, he transferred from Wake Forest. And so since Dave Clawson, their head coach, joined Wake Forest in 2014, no other Power 5 team targeted running backs as infrequently as them. They were two times below the league average rate by receptions, 2.5 times by receiving yards. So it's just like they never asked him to do it. So he's raw in that regard because of course he was. And then it was actually the same thing when he transferred Michigan State. You know, they historically didn't target running backs either. But in high school, he was hyper productive as a pass catcher. And just for what it's worth, guys like Daniel Jeremiah and other NFL mock drafters are very high on him. They've been sent practice film that was allegedly very impressive. But if you want to get into the weeds on Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker as runners too, we could do that. But that's just sort of the bull case argument for Walker and one I personally ascribe to.
You mentioned the bell cow element of it. Do you think that both of those guys are landing spot dependent? Or you mentioned there that you have Hall slightly higher. Do you think that he is okay regardless of landing spot? When we look around the NFL, we mentioned Buffalo, there's a lot of scenarios where either we have rushing quarterbacks, which doesn't help certain running backs in certain situations, or else we have semi-established or established veteran running backs in those rosters. So it is looking like, you know, scenarios that happen here that these guys aren't going to land at ideal landing spots. So do you think there is an issue with where these guys do land?
It's certainly possible. As Sean knows, draft capital and landing spot matter so much more for the running back position than any other position. If like this is never going to happen, but like if Pittsburgh takes Breece Hall, then yeah, like he's dust, right? So it's just so hard to say at this point in time. One of these guys could get buried behind an entrenched starter. I don't think that's too likely though. Miami makes a lot of sense. They wanted Javonte, but Denver traded up to pick right in front of them, snipe them. I think that would be a pretty fun landing spot. I think either one would be the clear RB1. Atlanta, that's another one. You know, that's not like if Kenneth Walker goes to Atlanta, that's like not that fun for Breece Hall. That's big, assuming the narrative on the pass catching holds. You know what I mean? Like because if you're a Derrick Henry, you're massively game script dependent. In losses, he averages like 12 fantasy points per game across his career. And in wins, he's like 20.1. And it's sort of this, but Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, they average more fantasy points per games in losses. So, yeah, and the offensive line matters a little bit less, where it's, we saw it with Najee Harris last year too. You can overcome negative game script for fantasy by catching those targets. Is that that's what's going to happen. You know, they're going to go more pass heavy, and then you're going to be a beneficiary of that. So, I mean, there's all things that play a role, but I don't know. I feel like I'm not doing a good job of answering. I just can't really right now, pre-hindsight, like, where are the landing spots? I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's one of the interesting things to look at right now is it doesn't appear to be that great, but we saw Jonathan Taylor go into a situation where Marlon Mack and Naeem Hines would seem like hurdles, and he fairly quickly blows those guys away. Obviously, Mack's injury factors in. You know, Taylor could have been the player who got injured, but we knew what the injuries are going to take place. And once they do, you really just do want that talent. And as you mentioned, you want that profile.
Hey, RotoViz fans, this is Dave Cabin from the RotoViz Fantasy Football Podcast, taking a minute to let you know that as a loyal RotoViz listener, you can get 10% off a one-year subscription when you use the promo code RVRadio2022 at checkout. It gives you full access to all of our content and tools. And again, that's RVRadio2022 at checkout for 10% off a one-year RotoViz subscription. Enjoy the podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And so, speaking of profiles, this is a thin class after those two guys, especially after Isaiah Spiller blew the pre-draft process. On the other hand, you know, he's a guy with decent size, strong age-adjusted production, three-down ability. Scott, give us the case for drafting some other running backs ahead of him. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting here is that you look at the mock drafts and kind of where they average out to project players. The tier immediately after Isaiah Spiller is weird because it's got a bunch of guys who are not good athletes and were not good in college. And so I'm having a hard time understanding what NFL decision makers are looking at that they would be excited about that style of back. If that's the other style that we have here, then maybe for me, Spiller climbs back up because at least he's better than that. But I think that you've got some players here that you're going to give us that we should be looking at.
Yeah. So I just said like the CEH thing, you know, like since then I've really tried to stay true to my board and not cave into peer pressure or projected draft capital. Last year, I think there was two guys I did that with. My model said Ramondre was above Sermon, and like I liked Ramondre better on tape. And then I caved and I flipped them and like I beat myself up. So like I'm really staying true to my board here. And like most of my dynasty leagues are pre-NFL draft rookie drafts. So I have Isaiah Spiller RB7. The production model hated him. The athleticism model hated him. So I have Brian Robinson RB3. I feel really good about that. And then RB4 through 6, it's a little murky. Right now I'm tentatively Damian Pierce, Rashad White, Tyler Algier, then Spiller, then James Cook. And what's tricky in this, so just a macro perspective of the class as a whole, it sort of reminds me a lot of 2016, which you'll remember wasn't a particularly great draft class. It had Zeke. We can say that's Breece Hall. It had Derrick Henry. We can say that's Kenneth Walker. It had a bunch of bad quarterbacks. Didn't really have a ton of great tight ends. Hunter Henry was like the only one drafted in the top 75, and he was better, I think, before injuries. But anyway, the wide receivers too. It was basically a bunch of busts. It was like what, Corey Coleman, wide receiver one, then Will Fuller, and really like the best one of the group was like Michael Thomas, who I think was wide receiver six. But anyway, that's what this class reminds me of. After Henry in 2016, it was strictly purely non-bell cows, non-starters, maybe Jordan Howard. And so like this class, again, like it just feels like a lot of non-bell cows. I don't know if there's a single starter running back in this class, but maybe there is, But Brian, these are the guys I think have the best bull case argument. Brian Robinson, he's sort of like Alexander Mattison 2.0 to me. The model liked his bell cow potential. Interestingly, I had Jim Nagy on my podcast, the director of the Senior Bowl. He said last year he thought Brian Robinson was better than Najee Harris. And he talked to people inside the Alabama building who felt the same way, which is just like, wow, crazy. And so my model had him RB3 before that. It was a decent enough combine relative to everyone else, didn't move him up. Damian Pierce, my model hated him. But the thing is, so Lance Zierlein, his evaluation on Damian Pierce, he said the fact that he only had 100 touches was a fireable offense for the coaching staff. And it turned out that coach did get fired. And so if I just doubled, that was the thing with Alvin Kamara too, where it's like, yeah, why was he RB3 on that Tennessee team? It made no sense. So in my model, if I just doubled his touches and production in his final season, he would have jumped all the way to RB3. So I naturally gravitate towards players with that kind of upside, that kind of argument I can make for them. A hyper elite by missed tackles forced per touch, hyper elite by missed tackles forced per reception, touchdowns per touch, like different stats like that. Efficiency was off the chains, but you know, again, 100 touches. I actually asked Nagy about that. He said he like heavily hinted that, you know, sometimes it's the case where there's some guys in the locker room who make a lot of noise and threaten to transfer if they don't get their touches. I don't know. And then Rashad White really liked his bell cow potential, hyper elite receiving efficiency, some of the best yards per route run since players like Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel, decent enough as a runner, far more athletic than Brian Robinson or Damian Pierce, really high-end elite athlete. So maybe I should have him RB3, or RB4 above Pierce. And then Algier, I don't know. He's sort of like the least interesting of the bunch, but I do like him above Isaiah Spiller.
You mentioned Rashad White there, and he has been pretty trendy over the last couple of months in fantasy circles, but it sounds like you maybe aren't as high as some of the people in the fantasy space, but the NFL decision makers don't seem to be maybe as high on him either. Do you think that there's a chance that he is somebody who kind of slides into day three? And you've run through some of the kind of the top five or top six running back names there. Do you think there's a possibility that we don't see a huge amount of those on day two, day one? Do you think we're seeing most of them go on day three?
I think we just don't know. I don't know that my rankings are going to sync up nicely with draft capital. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you're going to see teams like really prioritize a scat back like James Cook. But I mean, like that's a scat back isn't as valuable as, you know, Brian Robinson's upside if he can become a bell cow. Even if he is more of like an Alexander Mattison type, it's still like, all right, well, you know, like 50-50, he's a bell cow. Or what if the guy in front of him gets hurt, or if it's just like a perfect landing spot? Rashad White, yeah, I didn't really get why the NFL hates him, because Dane Brugler tweeted out in like February, someone came after him, was like, why do you have Rashad White, your RB18? You're lazy. And he's like, oh, then I guess a bunch of NFL teams are lazy because they have him a lot lower. So that's just like really scary. I don't get it. I don't get it. His numbers are off the charts. Freak athlete. Again, I probably should bump him above Damian Pierce. My rankings are a little outdated. The only negative I could come up with, and I really tried to come up with a strong negative to see what the NFL is seeing, is that his offensive coordinator, Zach Hill, in six seasons as NCAA offensive coordinator, had, you know, absurd levels of production and hyper efficiency. He had Jeremy McNichols, way more volume, similar receiving production. Alexander Mattison, way more rushing volume, similar receiving production. George Helani, who is that guy? I don't know, but you know, similarly productive. And so it's like, maybe this is a scheme thing, because like my running back model's biggest flaw is it just loves Mike Leach running backs. And every year I have to manually adjust down whatever Mike Leach running back it is. So maybe that's it, but I don't know. I'm pretty bullish.
It is interesting that you mentioned that there are these prospects who are getting boosted because the NFL is saying, essentially, we think their college coaching was very poor, and others who are getting knocked. One of the things that strikes me as odd here is that you have such a big athletic gap. And it's like, I don't know if we want to be knocking the guy who has true NFL athleticism and boosting the guy who doesn't, because that's a pretty relevant element. You know, running back is basically an athletic position, but you mentioned that, and it's kind of interesting because as I'm putting together the article on White today, you know, you have Jeremy McNichols as one of his comps, and point out, you know, there are guys who fail with this profile, even though the profile itself looks very good. So, Scott, I know that this is kind of a hot button issue for you, or just that, as you mentioned, you're a bell cow or bust guy. But once we get into kind of the deep rookie drafts, and, you know, frankly, once the wide receivers do eventually run out, because there's not an unlimited number of those types of players that you're going to put on your roster, we do get back into this area where there are some smaller backs. Now, I know you don't like the small guys, but when we're looking at some small backs who run in the 4.4s and contrasting them with big backs who, you know, weren't good, aren't athletic, all of that type of thing, how are you dealing with that when, I mean, obviously these pass catching backs in PPR, if you're looking at a build that maybe is more wide receiver heavy overall, those guys can come in, they can make some emergency starts for you. We have a little bit of a talk about potentially a fast track with all the guys who ran in the 4.4s, but you have guys like Pierce, Algier, as you mentioned, and then Kyren Williams, who's not a big guy, but also like not big and not athletic. How are you breaking down kind of that element? Can we get you on board with any of the small, fast guys?
I think there's a few of them. The one thing I'll say about Kyren Williams, so like my production model didn't like him. And my athleticism model, by sports score, my like just custom predictive athleticism said, he's third percentile, 19th worst of 622 running backs since 2000. The only thing I'll say about that is like every, mock drafter says he's going to be a scat back in the NFL. And like athleticism doesn't matter as much if you're a scat back, just like athleticism doesn't matter as much if you're a slot wide receiver. Theo Riddick, Tariq Cohen, Andre Ellington were some of like the least athletic running backs in my model, and they were all like competent scat backs. And it's interesting too. Like if you look at like PFF's all-time best pass blocking running backs, it's all like short guys. It's all like tiny guys, and you'd think like the bigger backs would do better, but maybe it's just like their small frame, like low man wins sort of thing. Plus, it's like it's more just like getting there, like the lateral agility that requires. I think Pierre Strong's really interesting. He's super athletic. His numbers are ridiculously good. He's just like a small school. So my model always, you know, severely penalizes and also sort of has a blind spot for those guys, but great numbers, great score. Bryant Kobach, like, isn't really worth mentioning because he wasn't invited to the combine, but another super athletic small school guy who my model thinks is at least a little interesting. Who were you thinking of
Well, do you like the guys like Cook and Beatty and Goodson and Ford? Any of those types of players do anything for you?
I mean, James Cook scares the crap out of me because he's getting Alvin Kamara comps, but I didn't have him as all that athletic. I had him as like a perfectly 50th percentile athlete, barring his three cone. I'm not sure if I have that in my data or not, but yeah, he's not that exciting. Kennedy Brooks, I did really like. I mean, his numbers are just really, really impressive. I think he had a bunch of red flags, like the off the field concerns. He's one of the oldest running backs in the class. He's a non-fact in the passing game. Didn't really improve on his freshman season, but he also really does have some of the best, most impressive stats in the class.
Tie things up. It's going to be hard to, you've gone through, you've kind of named most of the guys that we're going to be talking about, but we have it in the show notes as a must draft running back. So when it comes to fantasy, but I guess if you want to open that up, we can say who is your favorite running back in this draft class. So I'll give you an option one or an option two, but
again, I'm not the right person for this. I'm very bell cow or bust. If it's not a bell cow, don't draft him. So like I have Brian Robinson, RB3. That seems a lot higher relative to consensus, but I'm going to draft Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker, or I'm not going to draft anyone. After that, relative to consensus, Brian Robinson, Rashad White, and Damian Pierce. I like their, you know, swing for offenses kind of upside.
We're going to get into wide receivers in the second show, but kind of with that in mind, are you trading up? Are you paying extra prices to get ahead of some of these wide receivers to get to Hall and Walker? Do you like them enough relative to the receivers to do that?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. We have a lot to talk about in the wide receiver episode.
That's a perfect way, I think, to end it with a little tease for the Saturday edition of the podcast. But I did mention at the start, follow Scott on Twitter if you're not doing so already. It's at Scott Barrett DFB. You can check out all his work over at Fantasy Points. But as we do get ready to finish up here, Scott, is there anything that you have coming out over the next week or so that you want to highlight to the listeners?
Just check my pinned tweet. My model articles are all finally published. Running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, and everything that goes into that. My wide receiver article is 22% the length of The Catcher in the Rye. So enjoy that.
Thanks again to Scott for jumping on the podcast. Looking forward to having him back on Thursday as we do talk wide receivers for the upcoming draft. The draft, you know, it's practically here at this point, Sean. But as we talk through, there's still a lot of question marks around what's going to happen come NFL draft day.
There is, and that makes this next week and a half a lot of fun. It makes the draft just one of the best events that we'll have gotten to participate in or witness in a long time. And then it'll make the post-draft time period with the rookie drafts fantasy football is awesome, right? And it's so much fun to be able to do this year-round. It's so much fun to have an off-season that in many ways is better than the real NFL season. So we've been really enjoying that. I'm looking forward to using the info that we're getting from Scott in our RotoViz Triflex Dynasty Leagues with the FFPC. Have three of those that will go right after the NFL draft. Ben Gretsch and I just drafted a rookies and sophomore, a couple of teams for Stealing Bananas. So make sure you check that out. We can also use all of the great insights we've gotten from our guests over the last 6 weeks. So many good film analysts, stats analysts with different insights into these various players. And there are a lot of cool things you can do on Underdog to take advantage of that. Make sure you get in there and do a few of those drafts. With the coupon code RotoViz, you'll get a $100 deposit match, so up to 100. If you put that in your underdog account, you'll burn through that pretty quickly because those $10 drafts are very addictive and a lot of fun. But it's so fun to do these pods and to immediately turn around and play leagues.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You mentioned the guys we've had on over the last quite some time. And for the listeners, peeling back the curtain, we did already record the show that's going to come out on Saturday with Scott. And I don't know if it was on today's show or the show on Saturday, but he did mention the likes of Danny B. Kelly. Obviously, we have had Danny on recently. We've had Travis May, who will actually be back on next week's show. Matt Hicks. There's just been a great run of guests on here talking draft content over the last kind of, I would say, 2 months, Sean. We've sprinkled on some best ball content along the way, but it's been a fun run as we get to look ahead to the NFL draft now next week. But Scott will be back on the Saturday edition of the show. And just to finish things off, I do want to let the listeners know, as always, if you haven't signed up already, you can sign up to a RotoViz NFL Pass and save yourself 10% as a loyal podcast listener. All you have to do is add the code RVRadio2022 at checkout. That'll save you 10% off that subscription, get you all of the access to the content and tools up on the site, and very, very much worth the investment for the 2022 season. We are going to leave it there for today's show. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at OvertimeIreland. You can check out all of Sean's work up on rotoviz.com. He did also mention the Stealing Bananas, which came out on Wednesday. Two drafts that they did over at Underdog. Check that out. A lot of fun listening through. You'll get a lot of insights on both the rookies and also the sophomore players, the players entering their second year in the NFL. So check that one out over on the Stealing Bananas podcast feed. And until we're back on Saturday, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.